Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. How you doing? I give a shit. I give a shit about you. Aren't we? We're like descending into this maelstrom of whatever, right? Hey, I'm going to talk to you about that in a second. I want to get my on-air read out of the way. Okay, guys. Have you been donating to our fundraising? I hope you have, because, you know, if I can't yell at you, what am I going to do with my life? It's going to be awful. We need to work together more than ever. So anyway, go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. We're having this great Drive to Five campaign, and you can get a t-shirt. One of them I designed, but one of them is designed actually by the manager of the Clash. And that's so cool. So give us a donation, get a little money, give us a little money, very little, anything. We're not like, you know, small donations like Bernie. It made Bernie, look what happened to Bernie. But we need another 5 years on the radio. Help us out. That was a bunch of gobbledygook, but you get the point. So anyway, the coronavirus is exciting, right? But not in a good way. I just wanted to give out a little, this is how I'm handling it, okay? This is, everybody's different, but I think this is a good rule of thumb. If you have any anxiety at all, which you do, because you wouldn't be listening to this if you weren't. Thing to do is to keep in mind that an unknown outside force that's generating like fear out there in the world can illuminate and exaggerate all the anxiety that you have already naturally, right? And there's not a lot you can do about that. It's cognitive behavioral therapy, folks. What you have to do is figure out a way to just distract yourself, say it's normal to be anxious, fine, we're all in this together, and we're going to get through this. And that's what's going to happen, because it's got an expiration date on it. We don't know, could be 4 months, could be 6 months, but it's going to be okay. It's not forever. And hang in there, okay? And don't overthink it. Just figure out a way that you can distract yourself, okay? TV, not food or drugs or alcohol, okay? Something positive. Go for a walk. That'll really help. Anyway, on my show today, I have this really, really fascinating, I'm not alone in being fascinated by her, this artist, Alexandra Rubinstein. She's a young artist. She's 32. She grew up in Russia. What town? Where is it?
Yekaterinburg.
What kind of town is that?
It's a city. It's by the Ural Mountains. Yeah. It's pretty big. Close to Siberia.
So is it freezing cold?
It's pretty cold.
Yeah. Okay. So Alexandra, you got that, right? And then her family, they're Jewish. They tried to emigrate to America, and it took them 10 years. And when Alexandra was 9, she moved to Pittsburgh?
Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson. Your First parents live Tucson. In Pittsburgh now.
Yeah, we moved around a bit, settled outside of Pittsburgh. Then I went to college there, and here we are. Now New York.
Mm-hmm. She's a graduate of Carnegie Mellon. So I want to tell you, let me see. Actually, I asked Alexandra if she wanted to explain her work, but she said I should just read the statement. But I'm going to tell you the thing about it that's so fascinating is that she paints pictures of, it all involves male genitalia, but it's done from a very funny and very in your face, I'm going to say aggressive point of view, from the female pleasure point of view, where like there's one that I know is, okay, so she has this whole set of, let's say, the pelvis area of the woman, naked, where guys are doing cunnilingus, but they're not guys, they're Tom Hanks, and they're Obama, and they're
John Hamm.
John Hamm. And she has another set of, this is like the first time I like really, Alexander, this is like what really hit me in the face when I was like, oh my God, that's just too good. Was this piece I saw of yours at Untitled Gallery, mm-hmm. Indira and Cesarine's Gallery, folks, where she had a, it was a naked man, like a, you know, a beefcake shot, as they would say, but beautifully painted. Remember, she went to Carnegie Mellon, okay? She has a degree from Carnegie Mellon in painting. So there was a, what do you call it? A beer? Is it beer? You describe it.
I think you're
it.
Talking about the Thirsty series.
Yeah, the Thirsty series. You describe it.
That specific series, I'm pulling beefcakes from vintage Playgirls and using them to adorn bottle openers. And the series is called Thirsty, speaking to the newfound aggressive female desire and, the shift in dynamics and relationships that we're seeing right now. The women are a lot more assertive, more dominant, and and also drink beer.
what I think is really important about Alexandra's work, folks, this is my opinion, and I don't think I'm alone in it, but it is my opinion. What I think is so important about it is the way that she is portraying the voice she gives to women and the actual quality of the work together. I find it very rare that you find really such great, beautiful painting with such a strong in-your-face statement, especially from, you know, about men, aggressive towards men from a woman's point of view. And I'm going to read the statement really quick, her statement, which she asked me to read. I transform women from passive objects to active consumers and aim to take back power and control. Excellent, right? That's what we want. We women want our power and control back. Fuck you guys. The sexual currency, it's in our favor. And then it says, without taking centuries of oppression too seriously, I source images from magazine, film, and Google searches to mirror our culture and create a point of reference as well as stage my own. I then reformat familiar and taboo sub elements through polished paintings to create a new narrative, taking the subject matter more accessible while evoking our biases. And start. So she makes men into sex objects, but in a really funny way.
I think, like, yes and no, because I think it's, I'm not as much interested in making men into sex objects as demonstrating that women are active and aggressive. And I'm.
Yeah, that women like to have sex.
Like to have sex, but like to have power and control. And,
right.
And I think, you know, as a woman, a lot of my work, like we talked about earlier, does come from an angry place. And I have so much anger towards women being so sexualized and assessed physically and minimized to their bodies that I want to take the gaze completely off of them. You know, I don't care if it's male gaze. I don't care if it's a female gaze. I'm just sick of looking at women. Mm-hmm. So, and I want the female presence to be present in the piece without my body being in it. I think I want to disengage the idea of sex with women's bodies. Like, I think that minimizes us. And it, I just don't think that benefits women in any way.
No. I mean, yeah, that's really well put. And I also think that what you're saying makes so much sense, because I do think that men get a lot of feeling of power and control when they have their Playboy in their hand or whatever they have in their dick in their hand and whatever they're looking at.
Yeah.
And I'm going to adjust your mic a sec.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, keep talking.
I think, like, this is dramatic, but I like to always compare it to sort of rape. Like, rape is not about sex, it's about power.
Right.
Right? So I think when people see what they think is sex in my work, I don't think it's about sex. I think it's about power. And I'm much more interested in the power dynamics, because I think this representation of women in art, it disempowers us. Always being the subject, always being nude, beautiful. That's fantastic. We can celebrate women. but there's such an oversaturation of this celebration that I think it just it mutes our voices.
Right. And then it's just so ironic how simply you turn that back on itself, where women are empowered because they have a man in front of them, a painting of a man in an idealized painting almost, where the way they idealize women, and everyone's confronted with that, and it feels like the women are in control there, and the men, it feels like it must be humiliating to men in a certain way, and I don't even mean, like, in a way that it's very, I mean, I love the work, and I love how it's confrontational, right?
Of course, yeah. And I think it's, again, it's just about looking at them. It's scrutinizing them in a positive or negative way. And, I mean, you know, I think when I started a few years back, looking at the history of figurative painting and nudes in art, in American art, that women are so often depicted as passive, and just as objects looked at, which I think is A, just like boring, right? But also this idea of passivity being so linked with femininity is fascinating to me, because in today's climate, I think men are the passive ones because they're the ones that have more power and they're doing nothing with it, right?
Yeah, right. Very well put.
They're not doing shit. So I think that's an idea I really, like, really hung on to, is they're inaction.
Inaction. They have power, and the inaction as a combination. You know,
We don't, like, see, if we don't see them in work, if we don't visually see them, mm-hmm. it's like we're not even discussing their role in anything. They're just not there, even though they have the power. And
Well, we've all internalized the male point of view.
Yeah.
For looking at art, basically, right? And film and a lot of culture.
Yeah.
A lot of it is what sells is what is from the male point of view.
Of course.
So, but I do love the irony of, like, something as simple as a male body painted in a way that you'd imagine a female body. With the female body, you could put that in anybody, in a living room, in a dining room, you know, in any museum. But when you put it, take the same thing and just put a man in place, I use the word confrontational. I mean, that's hilarious, really.
Yeah, no, I think it's, and with the recent body of work using more male genitalia, again, I think we have such associations that it's vulgar, it's, like, the penis has so much power, right? It's what's the word? Like, it's invasive or something. Mm-hmm. And I think by censoring and not representing it has more power. So I think I want to put the spotlight on it and look at male vulnerabilities. And
yeah,
it's just another thing. It's just another body part.
It should be liberating for men. You're actually
Yeah.
I mean, you are doing men a favor.
Hopefully everyone a favor, you know. I mean, you know, just same with equality. This benefits everyone.
So anyway, I want you guys to look it up, okay? Because we're describing it, and this should be, like, at least fun for you to look up. You know, there's a lot of really great paintings, and there's dicks in them if you haven't seen a great painting of a dick.
There's dicks, there's cunnilingus, you know, something for everyone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of cunnilingus.
No tits. Definitely no tits.
Yeah. So anyway, so I'm just going to tell you her website right now, so you can go look it up, and then I'm going to find out more about Alexandra for all of us to dive into. But anyway, it's Alexandra Rubinstein, just the way it sounds, .com. But the Rubinstein, it's Rubin. Okay. If you have any problems, just go to my Facebook page and find it. So anyway, one of the things about Alexandra's background that I wanted to find out how that influenced her work, and we're not even really talking about her work as much as we were talking about her thinking, her mentality, her awareness of you know, culture and sexuality and power and all that stuff. So you were born in what sounds like a small town. Is it a small town in Russia?
It's a decent sized city. It's a pretty big city, urban environment, lived in an apartment, you know, just city life. And standard, I guess, middle class. I don't know. I don't know if Russia had a middle class at that time. Everyone was kind of poor. But, you know, pretty traditional family, two parents, two siblings, both parents pretty well educated. Like we said, my dad's Jewish. My mom was, she's not Jewish, she's Russian. She comes from like a pretty Russian family. Like, you know, her her parents had a little farm, so a little bit more peasant, I guess.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, rural.
Rural, yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, moved here when I was 9.
What was your life like? So we can imagine, like, what was your quality of life in Russia? Life, like, you're middle class, but what was the standard? Did you have a TV? Did you have, like, can you help us understand what your standard of living was like?
So we, there's five of us. We lived in a 2-room apartment. So in Russia, like, you don't have bedrooms, so you have 2-room apartment. We had the living room that also had the pull-out couch that my parents slept on. And then we had the other room where me and my two siblings
Mm-hmm. Was there ever any, like, did you have enough food? Was there ever a problem with food?
Yeah, I mean, like, we were dressed and fed, but, you know, we would only have soda on birthdays, like a banana was a treat. So it's just the Soviet Union of, like, just not having availability of everything. Mm-hmm.
Flush toilet,
hot water.
Okay.
Although not always.
Electricity.
It felt like we had the essentials. Basic. It wasn't.
Yeah,
I didn't feel like starved for things when I was growing up, but I also think that's it's just mentality, right? Like,
so everything. And did you have any questioning about, like, being female? I mean, you were only 9 when you left,
but
did you
9.
Ever think, like, the boys had it easier or anything? Like, did you have any of those feelings?
You know,
like, your brother. You have an old. You're the youngest of 3. Your brother's the oldest.
I think
you're all close in age.
I was still pretty young, but I think, and now, you know, going to therapy a lot and talking back about it, I do think, like, I was always aware sort of my appearance. Like, I think that was always, like, a thing I was aware of that was discussed.
What was that? How was that point? Was it from your family that you, or your friends, or the culture? Like, where your appearance was very important.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt that, yeah, it was important. It was significant. It mattered. So did, like, my intelligence, I guess. But I think, you know, I was young. So it was, like, once puberty started, that's when I think I became more aware of my appearance being more important, being sexualized, being, like, the more of my value coming from those two things as opposed to anything else, really. Mm-hmm. But I also, you know, both my parents are educated, so education was always very important. So I always had to have that too. But yeah, I think.
So, but you weren't, I mean, that was just the culture.
It was, I mean, it's hard because then we move when I'm 9 and then I feel like I become, you know, I'm starting to go through puberty. My family is going through a very difficult time. We're in a new country. Yeah. No one speaks the language. My parents don't have jobs. They're trying to move as quickly as possible to establish some sort of security for us. So I think, like, it was a trying time and maybe not the best sides of everyone came out. And I think I was just very aware of the way women were discussed, specifically by the men in my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think
about their looks.
Yeah.
They were always just,
like, I think, and again, like, I don't want to generalize, you know, but I will.
I think
Russian culture is very specific about the way it sexualizes women. It really, what's the word? Like, it's just all about youth, beauty, and very
submissiveness.
Like, I think, like, they're very sexualized, but also, like, this concept of purity was always a thing too, where you're sexualized, but you're also supposed to be a virgin. You know, like, that was, like, drilled in me. Like, your value is going to go down if you're not a virgin. So my value is, yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't know how much of that was Russian culture versus my personal, like, environment, right?
So confusing.
Yeah. And then I'm in America. So then I'm also getting different messages here of appearance is also important, but then, I don't have to be a virgin.
Yeah, sexual. There's, it's very different. So you're a very, she's gorgeous. No, I mean, you are a very attractive young lady. There's no question about it. Although I know that's not what we're focused on at all. But did you get a lot of attention? Do you feel like, how do you feel personally about being, you are an attractive woman, yeah, right? You could agree with that.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that in the context of what we're talking about being, you know, being sexualized?
So again, I think, in a way, you know, I mean, there's a couple of things. Like I was always told I was the pretty one, which is a fucking thing.
Oh, that's right? Hilarious. I mean, that's like,
it's
not hilarious,
it's really
but
not hilarious.
Oh man.
When you have a sister.
Oh,
and
man, that's so, oh God. Oh God. I'm so glad I didn't have a sister. That's all I can say.
I mean, you know,
your sister must have hated that.
I mean, I think it took us a while to get close. I think, you know, I was always told I was the pretty one. She was told she was the smart one. By my father. So
by your father.
By my father. And then, of course, my brother picks up this behavior and then it creates this antagonism, but also damage. And yeah, I mean, that compounded with the fact that I'm also not an internalizer. Like, I think a lot of, like, talking about therapy, like, a lot of women tend to be internalizers when they're victims of any sort of gendered,
bias or whatever.
Bias, language, abuse, whatever, that they think that they're doing something wrong. They find faults with themselves. They blame themselves. I'm more of an externalizer, and I think that's why my response was anger and rage.
Oh, wow. So you really upset the norms. You expressed your anger directly?
Yeah.
Oh, bad. I mean, that's very bad.
I think I was, my Sorry, response was always that I was just angry.
Well, like when they would say, like, your dad, like, you know, something would happen, you were the pretty one. Did you feel angry at that?
Well, no, because I'm also at this time, you know, I'm a teenager. I'm being told my value comes from my looks and sexuality. Yeah. So if I'm the pretty one, I have more value. Cool. But I'm also like, that created a whole other range of doubts and insecurities about my intelligence.
Right.
Which did not need to be there.
Right. So you know, that wasn't, but.
So that was my damage mostly from that being the pretty one was that I always doubted my intelligence, which
right.
was.
Right. Which is so wrong.
Which is stupid,
yeah.
You know, because then I go to Carnegie Mellon and then realize, oh my God, I'm actually pretty smart. What the fuck? You know?
Yeah. Right.
But then the rage was more coming from seeing the differences also in the way my brother and I were treated, you know, whereas.
Like, give me an example.
Where I'm being told to be a virgin and he's bringing home girls since he's like 15, right?
Really? So he was 15 years old and he would bring girls home to his like bed?
Yeah.
To your shared bedroom?
No. Well, this is in America now. We have separate bedrooms.
All right. Okay.
We made it. No. God, no.
This is starting to get better than I thought.
But then but this behavior is like encouraged in him, and he's like, it's encouraged for him to be a sexual being.
Right.
Whereas for me, don't do that. Your value goes down.
So you're a teenager, an average, you know, or whatever. You're in a regular school in Arizona, in Phoenix?
By this time, we're in Pennsylvania.
Okay. So you're
moving around quite a bit, but yes.
You're in school with other kids. You're with all the American kids.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, a very pretty girl with probably, and everybody is just being normal. Like, they want to look, teenage girls want to look sexy.
Right. I mean, you know, before we get to the sexy point, you know, there's also like a dark period of me just shutting down because I'm in a new country and don't speak English.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well, what happened there? Yeah, please tell us.
Well, I think my response, my migration was very hard. I sunk into a deep depression.
Really?
I developed a very pronounced OCD where I'm just, you know, rubbing all handles, which is coming in very handy right now, where I'm like just used to cleaning everything. But it was my way of retaining some control because I didn't have any control over my surroundings. I'm in a new environment. I don't know how to connect to people because I don't know English. I feel very lonely, you know. And at that point, you know, I'm like 12, so I don't, my appearance isn't like playing any sort of a positive or negative role, you know. I'm I don't know. It's
so eventually
I think I find power in it where I'm like, this is the one thing I'm being told I am, so I'm gonna.
Oh, being pretty?
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm going to try to get power from this superficial thing.
Ah.
And then eventually, yes, I started getting attention from boys in high school. But then, you know, I moved in the middle of high school to a new high school. And I think that's when I started receiving attention. And then it was also kind of very negative because I was the new Russian girl. So then I'm this other and I'm fetishized for being Russian, which this is how white Pennsylvania is.
I totally get it. That would happen in the suburbs of Philadelphia too.
I mean, they're shocked. Yeah. They're like,
really?
And I'm the most white looking person, right?
Yeah,
so,
of course.
So
yeah.
Generic and but wow. Other to them,
right?
And so then I have another like angry response to that. So I think every time I'm kind of put in these situations where I'm over-sexualized or my appearance or my sexuality come under this scrutiny and these expectations, I think my response has always been like anger and some sort of rebellion in a sense of trying to take power back in any way I could in these situations where it's, whether it's, you know, behaving in the similar ways that my brother does to prove to my parents that I can also do all these things, you know. And they're not good things. It's just heavy drinking or just masculine behavior or something, traditionally masculine behavior. You know, we know women drink a lot too.
So did you wind up in like a adolescent rebellion thing?
Yeah, I mean,
so
I
what
think
was that like? What happened at home?
I just refused to be told that I couldn't do things that my brother could do.
So did you have like friends that you...
So I would bring dudes over. No, I'm just kidding. No,
that's cool. No. It was better than my parents.
I mean, I guess I did actually.
No, but I mean like, so did you, what kind of interactions, what was your relationship with the boys at school when you were in high school? What was that like?
You know, I feel like it started actually in a relatively positive way in my first high school because it was a big high school. It was diverse. I didn't stand out. So my actions were not under scrutiny, you know. So it was, so I experimented with guys and it was a more like light approach to sexuality. Mm-hmm. And also the thing that they never told you in Russian culture is that oral sex is sex also. So, you know, I'm being drilled constantly that I have to be a virgin, but no one's telling me that other sex is also sex. Like I'm just being told never have intercourse.
Oh, so then oral sex, let's say both ways, back and forth,
right,
was like fine.
Yeah, like
that's weird. that isn't what your parents had in mind.
I mean, it was a very specific upbringing mentality in the way that, you know, and also my parents are not religious. They're both atheists. So that was never the foundation.
Right.
Of
right.
Them telling
right,
me not to have sex.
Right. It was all really about your
it
value.
It was about my value. Yeah.
Wow. That's so fucked. Sorry.
So I mean, fucked up.
And, yeah. I don't blame them either. That's where they're, you know, we're brought, whatever, but that's fucked up.
And I guess in that way, my mom was playing into that as well, where, you know, and I think maybe a lot of parents, women of that generation just didn't know how to talk about sex. So it was always just like, don't do it. Right. That was
right.
I never
yeah.
Had a
no,
sex
that's
talk.
True, too.
Never had any sort of a conversation about my body. It was I was very exploratory. So I was always kind of figuring all these things out on my own because, again, I was curious and I think I was so angry by it being under such scrutiny and being so important to my value that I wanted to have control over it.
Right, right. Wait, there was something I was going to ask you, which is, wait, I lost my train of thought. I wanted to ask you this question about getting so, oh, the girls. So yeah. I wanted to ask you, like, so I get the idea what happened maybe a bit with, we don't have enough time to get into all the machinations, yeah. but, I have an idea of how you were perceived by the boys. Now, what happened with the girls? Were they jealous? Did they guide you? Did they protect you? Did they talk about boys? Did you, what happened with the girls?
Girlfriends in high school? Yeah. I mean, I think I always like had a pretty easy time connecting to women. Good. So I feel like in all the schools, I would always eventually, like, even despite my language barrier, you know, eventually I would develop a close group of girlfriends. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the popular girls were not the nicest to me, but it was, again, it was a small school, you know, mm-hmm. I was other for being Russian, very specific, but I got along with most of the women eventually, you know, they weren't the friendliest to start with, but eventually warmed up to me because I think...
Because you're nice and smart and interesting.
I like women. I don't have any anger towards mm-hmm. women. All my anger is mm-hmm. towards men, you know. Again, I'm an externalizer, you know, I just, right. I always felt the anger towards them based on all the little experiences that were negative. Mm-hmm. You
There's
know?
Also a certain fearlessness that you have, right? Putting, like you say, externalizing, like, did yeah. you have any fear? Did you have any repercussions from expressing? Did your dad get mad at you?
No. And like,
no.
Did I have repercussions? I don't know. I mean, I think my parents tried to punish me. You know, I would like, I remember when I was 16, you know, a couple of friends like literally just brought me home blacked out drunk. And like, of course, my parents were upset. But I think I don't know. Like
They just dealt with that?
They just didn't have a lot of power over me, I think. Like, I think I had that sort of sense of entitlement that my brother had as well. That is, I think it's externalizing, but yeah.
So they just kind of like, well, we can't do anything about this.
I just couldn't. Yeah. But I mean, I'm sure part of it is also like they're in a new country. Like they also had less power in all the ways, you know.
Yeah. I mean, what they did is like cannot be underestimated, the bravery of what they did to like yeah. move their whole family here. And like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was a huge blow to their confidence as well.
Well, what like when you first moved here, was it really destabilizing to the, was everybody like in shock kind of thing? Was there a lot of preparations or was it just like,
no preparations. I think it was very like almost overnight, you know, they took out the money they could. They just kind of like figured it out. Then we flew out and came here and, you know, we had, we got sponsored because my dad's Jewish. So then, the Jewish community set us up for like 3 months. So mm-hmm. we were like on food stamps, all that stuff for mm-hmm. a little while. And then, yeah, just started from the bottom, you know?
Wow. Do you think it's not a specific incident, but that experience shaped you as much as anything?
Totally. Not all of us, in both good and bad ways. You know, I think that was, it's the most, traumatic experience I've been through, I would say.
And
there's been many.
Yeah, I have no doubt. So there's a certain amount of resilience that you have from that.
I wonder if it's resilience, or I often wonder if it almost took me all this time to rebuild all that confidence that was lost in this huge shift.
Wow.
You know, that I think kind of broke all of us.
Wow. Wow.
Because I guess like, and again, I don't know if this is across the board for all immigrants, but we didn't have any family here. We didn't have any network here.
Scary.
I think it's just like huge blow to everyone's confidence.
When you look back on that, do you think that your parents did the best they could to help you feel safe? Or do you think that they were just so like wound up in their own... I can't imagine, this is not judgmental in any way, but yeah. I mean, do you think that they made you feel safe, or do you think that they just were just so in their own heads that you were just sort of like fending for yourself more?
I think they did their best.
Of course they did. But what did it feel like?
I think it's more complicated than just this one experience. I think it's about both my parents as people. I think they're very extreme ends.
Extreme? Really? Even by Russian standards?
Well, I just think as people, like, that would, in terms of personalities, they think, you know, they met very young. And I think my dad's personality is very over, very loud and strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think...
Dominating, would you say?
Very dominating. And I think it was super heightened here, but I also think that that's sort of their dynamic, and under stress, they...
So he lost a lot of his power as a man that he had before he left, right? I mean, that's typical.
But I also think this is very superficial masculinity, right? This power over your family, that everyone listens to you, that that's not just given. That has to come from respect, and I think...
Did he take that? Did he assume that? Did he feel entitled to that kind of respect? Or
yeah, and I think he didn't really know how to handle himself when he wasn't getting it.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like he expected it, but he didn't actually. You don't feel like he actually was doing the work to earn it.
Mm-hmm. No, and I mean, again, you know, it's
yeah. Hey, he's pretty brave. I mean. We're talking about, yeah, no, hey, the guy's got his shit together more than most people I do. He got his fucking family moved from Russia to America. I mean, that's a big deal. I give that guy a lot of credit. Mm. I wanted to find out, like, how your work plays out in the world. So, I mean, we talked in the beginning about, I mean, very, very many layers of meaning and very important and valuable and thoughtful, you know, I mean, the most important thing about your work is the value and the message and the meaning of it. But we also know on a superficial level that, can I just say, mm-hmm. on the most superficial level, it's beefcake paintings.
Okay.
But the most superficial level.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody, like, let's say a guy, and you have a boyfriend now, right? Mm-hmm. But you have dated in the past. I mean, you know.
I've dated, yes.
You said you've been with your boyfriend less than a year or something that, right? So you've had plenty of dates, I'm sure, guys.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work out? Like, what if you meet somebody... Like, they came to your opening, like, I was at your opening. Mm-hmm. It was, like, packed with cute guys. And you meet somebody that way. Like, how, and they're not an art person. Like, mm-hmm. what happens there? Like, how do they respond to you?
Mm. Again, I mean, I think it ranges from very shallow readings of my work, right? Where it's, if they see any nudity immediately, that means I want to fuck. Mm-hmm. That's the simplification. From even if they don't understand the work, they often, because I do paint like pretty realistically, I think it's pretty accessible to people that don't,
yes,
are not familiar with art.
Absolutely.
That, you know, they also just admire it, or they have a respect for
their actual work. Yeah,
exactly.
That is, yeah, right. They can see how great the painting is.
To, like, you know, I've also gone on dates with men that actually get my work, which is rare, but really, really rewarding and nice. But I think it's hard because if they don't meet me at an opening, then I try not to bring it up right away, because I think my work is so personal and so shaped by my own personal history, which is not positive and not something you want to talk on the first day. Wow. Right.
Complex, I'll say that.
Complex, yeah. But yeah, I think it's part of me, so they kind of have to deal
with
it.
I'm wondering if men feel, like, intimidated by it, or do you think they're intimidated by it? Like, do you think men in general are intimidated by it?
I don't know if they're smart enough to be intimidated
by it. That's so interesting.
The ones I've gone on dates with, right? Because I think it's like everyone sees what they want to see. Like, I think a lot of them don't pick up on the rage. And that's okay.
So they just think that you love men's bodies.
I love dicks, you know.
Oh, you love dicks. Cause,
fucking love them, yeah.
Yeah, dicks aren't, yeah. I mean, it's funny because when I look at your work, I mean, dicks are definitely like a major part of it. It's also like, I look at them as like, wow, that's an idealized man. That's, you know, just a beautiful, hot, sexy man.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, like, I've only been, like, painting specifically dicks in the last year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I was doing, it's been a range of work. And, you know, with the Kongalinga series, I think I noticed that, which I'm already, like, mostly putting the attention on the men, not the women's bodies. Like, people are still talking about the women's bodies. You know how many questions I got about, like, why is she shaved? Why is she not shaved?
Oh,
like,
who fucking cares? About the fucking,
like, she's
pubic
just
hair?
Like framing the face.
God, really?
So, and I think with the cunnilingus again, it's like everyone just wants to think I'm celebrating these things. And
right. They don't get it.
That's them projecting their own things on it.
Right.
That's what men want to think. I'm celebrating them, their bodies, them eating pussy. Don't care.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. I mean, that is part of the role of art, is that people do get out of it what they want.
Totally.
If we're all able to make our own minds up about a piece of art that we are looking at. How do women react? Women that, I mean, I imagine like all your friends are your fans also, mm-hmm. but like what about, you know, more superficially, like women that you don't really know that well, mm-hmm. or...
I mean, I think women definitely tend to get it more and to connect it in a deeper way. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, it's...
Have you ever had...
That's what I'm catering to. That's my perspective. And again, it's a heterosexual perspective, so it's very
mm-hmm.
specific as well. But we don't see it. You know, I think that's always interesting too, right? Because a lot of people think... when they see my work before they know me, like they assume it's a man painting all this stuff. That's like a very common assumption.
Oh, that it's a gay man?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That didn't cross my mind.
Yeah. And I think,
oh my God, I didn't even think about that. That's so obvious though.
And
wow.
It's always interesting, like gay women's response to my work, because it's almost like things they really don't want to see. You know, I have a friend who's like never knew what a dick looked like before she like looked at my paintings, and I'm like, this is fascinating.
Wow.
I mean, they enjoyed the Cunnilingus series, but they don't ask paint women. I'm like, no, because that's catering to the male gaze too much, not interested.
Well, it's also really hard to make an original statement with a naked woman, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I'm just not interested in it.
Really, it's all been, it's pretty much been explored.
Yeah. I just can't look at any more tits, I gotta say.
And what about, like, so the art world, what mm-hmm. about, I know that you have, like, an enormous amount of respect mm-hmm. from everyone that I mean, when you were going to be on the show today, I got a lot of messages from people that they were really excited that you've been on, and you have quite a large following. You have, like, I don't know, you know... thousands, 10,000, 15,000, 20,000, I don't know how many. You have a mm-hmm. lot of, you have a big following, true.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm just going to put it out there. When I did some research on you, I was expecting, I know how well respected your work is, and I've seen it in a lot of places and stuff like that. And I was thinking that you would have like more of an international showing, or more of maybe some more shows and mm-hmm. like more, you know, blue chip galleries or something like that. And I was surprised not to find that you haven't been embraced in that way or cultivated in that way. Is that like, have you tried, or are you not interested in that? Or what's your thought about the whole, where you fit into the big picture of art world thing?
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know if right now my work is fitting into the mainstream art world so much. I think it tends to get pigeonholed, which again, I'm not that upset about. You know, I also think like, I'm sure I could be more proactive as well, but I just have so much more fun producing the work. And I think, you know, and I mean, of course I make an effort to get into shows, connect to people, but I also think it's, yeah, I think my work is a little harder to show for people, or they think it's harder to show.
Have you had, I mean, I imagine you have a lot of studio visits. Do you have a good amount of studio visits? What kind of By the way, I just wanted to point out that I get the feeling that you're making, you feel really connected to your work, I think. Like, you're making the work you want to make.
Yeah.
You're not struggling with, like, what am I going to make? Or, I mean, you're developing, but it seems like, which is, by the way, folks, a really hard place for all of us to get to, right? All of us creative people, where you're making the work that, like, feels right. And you, I think you have that, which is, I think, the ultimate success, frankly, if you ask me. But anyway, so that's what counts. But I'm just wondering how, like, curators and like, what kind of feedback, or are they direct with you? Do they say things, or do you, what kind of feedback do you get from art?
I mean, I think the feedback that I think is funny is I had this series from a while back. I want to say like 2012, 2013, and it was, I don't know if you're familiar, it was a fruit paintings.
I'm not sure. Describe them anyway.
I did this little series. There was one part that was banana spooning, like pairs of like tomatoes, etc. It was just kind of like, it was still.
So it's like sexuality and food.
Sexuality and humanity, but like using fruit.
Right. Metaphors.
And I think, you know, it was very accessible and easy to see and show. And I think it's funny how many people keep asking me about that work still, because it's just so much easier.
Oh, wow.
For, and again, like, I don't, you know, that's, I understand, like, I don't think this is, I don't know. I understand that my work is hard to show in all contexts. I know it's not going to reach all people. I also think that art should be challenging to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of it, you know, we all make what we want to make. I want to be making right now. And I'm, completely respect people not being able to show or sell it or having reservations about it.
See, you know, it's really funny because talking to you right here and now, like even doing the research on you, which I just did today, shouldn't admit that probably, but the thing is that I am sort of like it. I did not anticipate that you would have that much, you know, friction as being accept. Like I would have thought. I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought that it would be like a lot. I don't find it hard to show. Like I'm surprised that people, like it's so ironic because if those were women in the same situation, it would be, you know, people would be like, it, you know, I want that. That's a beautiful painting of a naked woman. But, but if you make, it's so interesting how simple just putting a male body in instead of a female body makes it difficult. Like I did not think that personally. Naive I may be, but I did not think that.
I mean, in a sense, I started painting literal digs because I was like, no one else is fucking doing it. Like there's a few artists actually that do use it in the work, like Aurel Schmidt. Like I know she actually has beautiful drawings with dicks in them and there are, you know, that she's PPOW, like she's doing great, but so it's like it's there, but it's like not in a really aggressive way.
Although
it's pretty aggressive, but
not
a lot of people are doing it, and I think it's almost like maybe I don't know where to put me. It doesn't matter,
but I just think it's interesting comment on culture that like in this day and age that like what you're doing is difficult for the art world to digest.
I also think like humor is like a really important element to my work.
Yeah.
And that could also be like working against me sometimes because I think it's like, I think the art world takes itself too seriously. And maybe like a funny dick painting is,
they don't even get it.
They're not comfortable with it being art. And I think that's a problem. Mm-hmm. That's actually one of my biggest problems with the art world is this lack of humor in work.
I could see that. Yeah.
Like, just if I'm talking about serious, important things, it doesn't have to be so dry.
Well, the paintings are serious. I mean, the quality of the paintings are serious. Yeah. And I think that
I'm painting.
I think that's what people, I think that the skill, the talent, the quality of the painting is there. And I think that's what, so people want to take the painting seriously, but then the subject matter, they just, I think it's very new, which is good. It's good. People have to get used to it.
Yeah.
Painting. So you're obviously a talented artist. So when did you start? Were you always interested in painting and drawing? Was anybody in your family interested in, how did that happen?
I mean, I remember both my parents are kind of good at drawing. They never like did it, but you know, even like growing up and you're a little kid and they're helping you with flashcards. I think there was like some talent there. And then, yeah, I guess I started when I was young. I started in Russia. I started my art classes. And then, when we moved here and I started going through my depression at 12 years old, I think my mom and my sister decided that maybe this would like help pull me out of it, to have some sort of an outlet. It's almost too stereotypical. And then they put me in an art class, and you know, I feel like for a lot of them, I would just sleep through them because I was so depressed, but it was something I was good at. And I think it gave me confidence, and, I just stuck to it because I was good at it.
Yeah, that seems like something that would have, like, what you were describing was that you were given, you know, being taken seriously or given a lot of power, credit, whatever, mm-hmm. because of your appearance. But that seems like that would have balanced that out quite a bit, no?
Yeah, but I guess
But no,
my sort of intelligence wasn't as valued as like my sister's. You know, she was a smart one.
No one takes art seriously in elementary school. What does your sister do now?
She's a doctor.
Oh, okay.
So she was smart. They weren't wrong. She's also beautiful.
So what's it like for your boyfriend? Now your boyfriend, you guys have been dating like 8 months. You said, mm-hmm. Is he an artist?
No.
What does he do?
He's in cybersecurity.
Wow. Yeah. So how did you guys meet?
Bumble.
Nice.
Not an ad. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I met on Bumble and
Yeah. So how was he at your opening?
He was at my opening.
And how is that for him being with, does he have any other artists? That's so random. He doesn't know anything about art or have any artist friends or?
I'm not sure.
Your introduction to art?
No, I mean, like, he's from New York. He lives here, I think. You know, he's
sophisticated.
Yeah,
sophisticated, for God's sake.
He's familiar with art.
So what's his take on it, though? How do you think he felt at your opening? Or
I think he likes it, from what he tells me. He's very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
He's supportive, which is, I think, that's what's most important to me.
Right.
I've never dated an artist. I've dated creatives, but I think, I don't know if I could date another visual artist. Like, I feel like this is my thing. Like, I have my ideas, you know, it's nice to have a sounding board, but I don't need it to go much beyond that.
Right. You'd like to have that as your thing.
Cause I don't know. I always think about it. Like, I almost think like it's hard to find like another artist whose work you respect and like that much, right? But then it's also like, and then at that point, like, do you get competitive? Like, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I haven't had that experience.
Do you think like his friends, like, I'm just imagining you out with his friends and his friends making fun of him or something like that. Does that ever come up or anything like that?
Not that I know of. A couple of them actually came to the opening, so and bought a piece. So,
I think
they're into it too.
Well, they probably also know you and know about you before they know your work, and so they probably have some perspective too. Boyfriend says nice things about you. I'm
hopefully.
Sure,
but yeah, no, I mean, I think we all have preconceived notions and judgment, and that's okay.
Sure. So we only have 5 minutes, but I also wanted to talk about how your work affects your relationship with your family now.
Mm-hmm.
So how does it affect your family's in
Pittsburgh? They're outside of Pittsburgh, then the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fairly close to my mom. I don't really talk to my dad, and I don't really talk to them about my work anymore. I feel like it's a disappointing conversation for me. I don't think they understand art. You know, I think my dad used to offer me his opinions, which it's almost this like male entitlement of like, why do you think I'm interested in your opinion? You're not an artist. You're not in the art world. You're not educated on these topics.
It was condescending for sure.
You're a misogynist. Like, why do you think I'm interested in your opinion? And it's this entitlement of thinking his opinion's important. And that used to aggravate me. And, you know, and I think with my mom, it's just like this vibe of disappointment. And it's just,
she's disappointed?
Of course, yes. Yeah, Russian parents always disappointed. Nothing's good enough. It's just anything related to the art is always just such a disappointing conversation to me that it's a landmine.
Why don't you talk to your dad? Your parents are married and they live together, right?
Well, I mean, I think he's a large part of why I'm in therapy. So I think it's just a relationship I'm trying to work through and see what I want from it, you know. I think
so. You were the one who installed the distance,
yeah,
and you let him know that you don't want to talk to him. Mm-hmm. Did you tell him directly, or did your mom tell him?
I probably texted him that I need space.
It's a breakup call. A breakup text. So how is he handling that? Do you think it's helping?
You know, I don't think he's happy about it. I think he's struggling. But again, I think. I don't care. This is like, I don't know. It's not on me to solve this. Uh-huh. I think, you know, I'm not happy with the way a lot of things happened when I was younger. And we're reconciling. I'm reconciling it for myself first. And I think I don't believe in relationships out of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And if I think that's a really tough call to make with your family, but mm-hmm. I think you just have to.
So is it that you want distance from him so that you can sort of like, you know, straighten out your own thinking and decide what you want to do? Or is it because you just find him just too difficult?
No, I think I need an apology.
Does he understand that?
Well, we're not there. Like, I haven't communicated this yet. I think before I can move on from anything, you want someone to apologize for the things they did, a real apology of mm-hmm. acknowledging fault. And I think, you know, and I think right now in this climate of men fucking up left and right and their inability mm-hmm. to apologize mm-hmm. and see their wrong is mind blowing. And I think mm-hmm. I'm going to externalize it. Like, there needs to be a consequence. Mm-hmm. It's like, I will not have this relationship out of obligation. No one is going to guilt trip me into it, even though they're trying really hard. I just, no, like, the consequences.
When you talk about the things he did, do you mean that, like, the way he talked to you or the values that he put on you? Is that what you mean? Or did he hit you? Or
right.
Like,
I think, you know, it's not something I want to get into detail. I think it's definitely connected to language, for sure.
It was harsh.
Yeah, it was very detrimental.
Yeah, and it's concrete things. It's not just an attitude of like, yeah, he had a bad attitude.
And then it also just comes down to, you know, and I think a lot of this stuff came up after the election of, I don't know if you respect women. I don't know. I don't know if this is a relationship worth having for me.
All right. Well, you know, thank you so much. This is so fascinating. I'm going to have to digest all this, but we got to get going because we've got Elon Danziger coming up with Lost and Rewound. So stick around. We've got great programming this afternoon. We have, at 4 o'clock every day, we have a local music show called Bushwick Bandstand, Brooklyn Bandstand. Sorry. I also want to let you know that we're supporting sisters. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.